Good evening to you, and welcome to the show, History and You, with George Rodriguez Walling.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to History and You, the show where you decide what history becomes. I am your host, George Rodriguez Walling, and I'm very happy to be here with you this evening. If you want to call in and contribute your thoughts, please call at toll-free 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Please call me and tell me your views. If not, send me an email at historyandyou@yahoo.com. That's historyandyou@yahoo.com. You'll find me at www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. That's bbsradio.com/historyandyou. Tonight's show is brought to you by the folks at FX Software and Sweet Pea Women's Apparel by Stacy Frati. Tonight's topic, it's about each other. Let me repeat that again. It's about each other. If we took the time and the interest to understand each other more, the better chances we would be to stay happy with each other. Because it's not about you or the other person, but rather it's about us in the moment. It's about feeling good with each other. It's about being comfortable to be open, to be sincere, to be natural, comical, accommodating, compromising, trusting, honest. And to be able to become one spirit with the other in viewing the world together through the same lens. Ah, such words. Such nice thoughts. If it can only be true. One of the hardest things for people to do is to be happy. It's true. Because history says so. And because history has also shown that love without money or interest is nothing but a lingering glimmer of affection that usually turns into a lustful pang for satisfaction, then roams again. Throughout the latter parts of the 19th century, we've all heard about love and sex in the West, and how drifters would fight loneliness in scores of ghost towns from either a bottle or by reading published fantasies of romances that rarely existed. Or people would hear about sex in cities, lest you had money, which would then turn into lust fests, inundated in poverty, and infested with the greed to covet once again. Throughout the 20th century, relationships, notwithstanding early Victorian influences or the bully pulpit imposing church moralities or the gradual surge of gay romances, but relationships, most commonly seen among heterosexual married couples, was usually tilted more often than not in favor of the man. The psychology of resignation on the part of a woman in accepting a more traditional and submissive role to the man must have been a very suffering and an equally defeating role to survive. Just the fact that their input, be it in a business environment or political circles or in a social context, their input was expected to be discouraged and suppressed for so long that people just came to expect the role of women as being hardly survivable in open society. And it is precisely this mindset that has spilled over into the personal side of intimacy, where now women are trying to find their way into a relationship with a more natural and genuine role to the person she's with, without having to assert herself on an equal basis in a militant style. But is it still possible to find happiness among couples today in our cantankerous world? Yes. Yes, it is. But you first have to understand what happiness is, which will, in turn, show you how to keep it. It's chasing a butterfly, eluding as it is, the confidence that comes from understanding what it means to be happy or a happier individual will then find a sharing of that same happiness with someone else. And look, the butterfly has come to rest on your shoulder. We are so often troubled and cluttered by our pride, our egos, complexes, and even our own inadequacies, that we don't even take time to cure ourselves from whatever hampers us in the pettiness of being, quote, people. Instead, try being human, which is further expressed by being humane, which supersedes being, quote, people, and transforms you into more of a person that sees the world from the microcosm of pettiness to the grandeur of the human capacity to care at a very new and different level. Whether you are married or just living together, couples today, it seems to me, have decided that one of the last priorities about being with each other is to be with each other, to find that connected enjoyment that comes from each other's wanting to be together for much of the time. Why? Why? Remember, you chose this person as someone that's more than just a partner. This is supposed to be someone special. So don't go taking specialty for granted. And if she is special, also remember that you'll only enjoy that other person's special moments for only the time you've been given, till death or illness do you part forever. When was the last time you thought about forever? Well, I don't know about you, buddy, but forever to me sounds like one hell of a long time. But you know, it's hard to get that connection going. It is. It's hard to get that connection. I understand that. It's part of being a human being. Sometimes we have to jumpstart a relationship like one would a car or truck, but it's how you reconnect that can make a difference with couples. The, quote, how in things is driven by a style or method or even an approach to situations that can clarify, illuminate, and even come to inspire others to redo or help their relationship differently. As a matter of fact, couples can come to see a new face to their situation in a flash of a moment. Yep, it's true. Tonight's guest is a wonderfully unique psychotherapist, couples therapist, and clinical supervisor in the Philadelphia area for over 25 years. A graduate of Hahnemann College, Medical College, an alum of the Columbia School of Journalism, and a prize-winning crusading reporter, this remarkable clinician passed over a job offer at the New York Times to dedicate her life to helping others repair their own relationships. This remarkable lady has been quoted to say, "I gave up journalism when I saw that getting a few million readers upset over the world's grievances was only adding more pain to the world. I could do more good being calm and happy working with a handful of people a day. Now I want to teach others how to be calmer and happier with the person they woke up with this morning. To me, this is the real way to world peace," unquote. My guest this evening has been cited in the Utney Reader, Harper's Collins, 500 Ways to Change the World, the Global Ideas Bank, the New Age Journal, and the Journal of Couples Therapy. The latest edition of her book entitled, Talk to Me Like I'm Someone You Love. is the one I wish to focus on tonight, because it offers relationship repair in a flash. And I'm not kidding either, because she uses, quote, flashcards as a method to retool a loving relationship. Ladies and gentlemen, it is truly with great pleasure that I present Dr. Nancy Dreyfus. Welcome to the show, Nancy. It's very, very good to have you here with us.
Thank you very much. It was fascinating listening to you and putting some of this in a historical perspective.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Nancy, let me start off with so many things that I really do want to cover. What exactly does a flashcard do for an arguing couple?
Well, maybe I ought to give an example of what some of these flashcards are. And
absolutely.
I'd like anybody listening to this, imagining that you are in an interaction with a loved one where you are truly experiencing that person as impossible, and you're having a sense that things are only going south. You don't know how to get through to that person. It feels frustrating. The person seems defensive and small. And in the middle of this interaction, that person holds up a card to you that says, "I realize I'm overreacting. Can you give me a minute to get sane again?" Or, "You're not being crazy. I can see why you'd be upset with me." Or, "When you go on and on like that, I feel invisible to you." Or another one, of we have over 100, "Right now, I don't need a lecture. I need your love."
Yeah, and that's one that I cited. Yeah, it either it takes you off guard, it keeps you off balance. It other flashcards seems to do something that I think is very gratifying, self-gratifying, I would even say, for a lot of people. It validates their state of mind.
Well, what I want people to notice about these cards is that probably what was happening before the flashcard was shown, you were talking about money.
Yes.
Or in-laws, or "I think you're drinking too much," or "I think you should be more assertive with your boss," or "You were too assertive with your boss."
Yes.
That you were talking about the content, and notice what I was doing, because nothing ever gets healed when you deal with the content.
Yeah.
I'm simply, in every case, going back to how I can feel either realer to myself, or how you and I are treating each other, or what my impact is on you, so that over and over again, I'm ignoring the content and going into what we call the process or the relationship.
Yeah.
Anybody listening, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, anybody who's been in a relationship knows how quickly you can be in the most cozy romantic space with your partner, and in a second somebody interrupts you, somebody misses the point, and I like to say how quickly we can go from cozy to crazy.
Yeah. You know, I was going to mention your book, Talk to Me Like I'm Someone You Love. What a title. Not only offers a different approach for couples to reference, but the title is so warm. Where did you get the idea for the title?
Well, I'm glad that you asked. Over 20 years ago, I wouldn't say that I was a junior therapist, but I'm not as seasoned as I am now. I was working with a couple who, I have to tell you, reminded me very, very much of my parents. I grew up in a not particularly happy household with two pretty unhappy parents, with a mother who constantly screamed at my father. And I was with a couple who were sent from Central Casting. And the wife actually called the husband one of my mother's favorite words for my father. She used the word asinine. You don't hear that word that much these days, but she used the word asinine.
Yeah.
And I went into what's called a countertransference trance. I was like a 12-year-old with my parents, feeling impotent, unable to reach them like I did as a kid in my house. And I will be the first to acknowledge, as many therapists, I'm sure this is part of why I went into the profession I did.
Wow.
And I was the professional, and I couldn't speak. And
yeah.
On a scrap piece of paper on a desk, I leaned over and I wrote the phrase, "Talk to me like I'm someone you love," and I handed it to the husband, my father substitute, and I stage whispered to him, "Hold it up to her." And this guy, kind of schlubby guy, looked at what the flashcard said, the first flashcard ever made, and he held it up to the wife, and you can hear the dignity in the phrase, look at the embedded self-worth. Talk to me like I'm someone you love. Yeah. The holder of that phrase is communicating, I deserve to be talked to in a loving manner.
Yes.
And I watched a miracle in front of my eyes. An
Good
extremely
for you.
Strident, relentless woman did what we call drop down, took in what the husband was communicating, and in a moment said, I guess I haven't been very nice to you, and started treating him more respectfully. The two of them walked out of my office as friends, and I was floored.
Good for you. Good for you. It's a very warm and telling story. It certainly does tell a lot. And it's very inspiring, too. The title is terrific because the more I look at it, the more I think about it, the more I reflect on it, talk to me like I'm someone you love, really has a way of reaching in and grabbing some part of you and making you come to your senses for the moment. Great title. Nancy, at this point, do you have a website that you want to tell our audience about?
I do. It's my name.com, Nancy Dreyfus, DREYFUS.com. And you can get a real flavor of the flashcards. We actually even have an audio of a couple having a fight. It's actually a real fight that a couple actually had, which we had them recreate on tape, and you can see how the flashcard works. And you can order the book, which contains the flashcards. It would be the new edition has 127 flashcards, a flashcard on each page with a little essay describing it, and then we have a mini deck for traveling because people have fights in cars and all sorts on planes and all sorts of places.
Sure.
A deck of 64 actual cards, which are not as complete as the book, and there's been some confusion. The actual book contains the cards also.
Right.
NancyDreyfus.com.
Good, great. Nancy, let me, because I have so many questions to ask you, in your professional opinion, Nancy, how has the history of relationships evolved over the past 50, 60 years, going back, say, to your grandparents?
Well, you know, it's a great question, because anybody listening, you cannot imagine that your grandparents, and in most cases your parents, ever even asked the question, are we relating to each other? And I would say for everyone who's struggling in a relationship, which is everyone I know, and I would have to say I am the first person to say that writing this book is about 800% easier, even for me, than actually having a loving, conscious relationship, that when they look back on us in 500 years, George, they're going to see us as relationship primitives. And why is that? The entire idea of relating, just take that word, which is common parlance today, was not around 50, 60 years ago.
Yes,
why?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because based on the work of Freud and consciousness raising, the whole idea that I have an authentic self, that there's a real authentic Nancy who wants to come out and see the day, and you're a real authentic George, and there's a real authentic Sarah, and a real authentic Stephen that wants to come out and be known. We are not used to expressing our true self in relationship, and we're trying to do that with a partner who never got to express their true self.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's something I tried to express in my introduction, because it's the idea of relating that has been taking a back seat for so many of us, particularly women, over such a long period of time.
Are you familiar at all with the work of John Gottman? Do you know who he is?
I've read on him.
Well,
no,
John Gottman
not.
Is somebody, I think he is considered the world's premier researcher on couples. He has a lab in Seattle where he wires couples up, and in 15 minutes, based on their bodily reactions to each other, he can tell whether they're feeling embarrassment, annoyance, lust, pleasure, respect. There are physiological correlates to all emotions. He can tell within a 15, 20-minute interview whether a couple will be together in 5 years. And I'm going to tell you, and I was thinking of this when you gave your intro, I am going to tell you in his masterwork what he has come up with about what makes a happy relationship. And we can think about this now and 50 years ago. These are the three components in the marriages that are the long-term relationships that are deemed happy. The first thing is, and I was listening to what you were saying about men and women, The first thing is that the woman believes that she can influence the man. Okay, so think about where that is today as opposed to 50, 60 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay? The first thing is the woman can feel she can influence the man. The second one, drum roll, is that the man, and we're talking now about heterosexual relationships. There are some similarities in same-sex, but I'm not going to go into that. That the second piece is that the man can hold space for her negative emotion. I mean, it is a very, very unusual human being who can not get defensive hearing negative emotion. And men are hardwired in a certain way to feel shame or diminished. So we now need
a man who can... Or even a sense of guilt.
Right, right. Well, yeah. I would say guilt and responsibility. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the kicker. Those two things would seem to put the burden on the guy, all right? Having to give the woman some influence, having to hear her complaints. But how it all works is actually in the hands of the woman. Because when the woman lodges her complaint, she has to do it with what we call a slow startup. If, in fact, she says, begins by saying, how could you do that? Or you did that again, or you know that hurt me. If she starts with anger, he will shut down in most cases, and they will not get past the starting gate. And the analogy is often made that in when it comes to making love, a woman needs a slow startup. She does not like to begin with being pounced or pawed. It's an unusual woman who would prefer that approach. Well, when
Nancy,
it comes to pardon, go on.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, when it comes to communicating, a woman needs to begin with a slow startup, which is why my flashcards are actually so powerful in getting through to defensive men or defensive women, because we have no voice tone. And so we're starting with a slow startup.
Nancy, is love getting easier or more difficult?
Oh,
or is
God.
It simply more complicated now?
That's the hardest question anybody's had. That's the hardest
question. As simple as it sounds, yet I tend to think it runs along the more comprehensive, because the more I think about my own question, the more it becomes harder for me to find some kind of an answer.
Well,
I think we have
to have a different definition of love. So I'm going to give you my definition of love, and then you can respond to it. Okay? I'll give you my current definition of love. And this, again, has to do with authenticity and having a true self, and people might not have known 100 years ago what I was even talking about, but you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right,
my definition of love. If I love you, George Rodriguez Walling, I want you to be more connected to your voice than mine, knowing that that sometimes will make me uncomfortable. If what I'm trying to do is get you to be connected to me, my love is fractured. Real love is holding the space so that you can be connected to yourself. I'll give you a quick example.
Well, I would agree with that, because I think that's part and parcel of what I was trying to say in my intro. In part, sure.
So I would definitely say that love is more complicated if it means having to tolerate the discomfort of somebody saying something or being something that isn't what you want. Let me give you an example of something. This happens all the time. I work with a woman for 2 years, and she complains to me that her husband doesn't share his feelings. She's convinced me he can't. His mother drained the life force out of him. He can't talk to his brother. He doesn't have any male friends. He's a communication zero. And she's kind of got me inducted. So we bring Howard in.
Right.
And he comes in, and he's not quite as bad as I imagined, and he says, I know I'm not a good communicator. At least he knows that, which is a pretty good communication, and I know she's disappointed, but she's not the only unhappy one. You know, I'm pretty lonely. We haven't made love for 6 months. And she interrupts, and she says, haven't made love in 6 months, and who am I supposed to make love with, the man who missed his son's soccer game on Saturday? And then I make a timeout sign, and I say to her, Sharon, another name I'm making up, you have complained to me royally that Howard doesn't share his feelings. I just heard him share his feelings very clearly and very openly. what you need to understand, if you want your guy to share feelings, you may not always like what he has to say, and it may not always be comfortable.
And so isn't the point behind that is so that both have to enjoy as both have to also sacrifice?
It's interesting your use of the word sacrifice, and maybe you can explain that. What I am saying is that in order to truly love, you have to learn how to tolerate discomfort.
It seems to coincide with my idea of sacrifice.
It's tolerance, compromise. Tolerance, yes.
Yeah. Nancy, let me ask you, at this point of the conversation, do you believe that among couples there's always one that is stronger than the other? And what I mean by stronger is, does the woman or does the man take more of an initiative more often? Or do they come up with more viable ideas or anything that will, in standard language, give the edge to the other partner?
By stronger, do you mean healthier or more forceful?
More influential.
That is an interesting question. I would say...
In other words, let me give you an example, as you've given examples to me, and maybe it'll help clarify what I mean by influential.
Give me an example, because I want to enter your frame of reference.
Very quickly, my wife and I have a situation that we have to contend with, and I offer my advice as to how to approach the situation, treat the situation, find a solution to the situation on a permanent basis.
Mm-hmm.
I invite her ideas as well. And in comparison, I make her realize, I convince her, or I have become more persuasive that my advice is more viable to apply, to employ, than hers. So therefore, my approach to the problem has, in her mind, been more viable, more usable, more applicable.
Okay.
That's one kind of influence.
I mean, so that would be an example where you had a better idea than she had.
Which can transform into, if you multiply times various other kinds of scenarios, could my conversation with her be one where I predominate in the conversation more often than not because she has accepted the fact that my ideas are more influential on her than vice versa?
Well, it's a very interesting question you ask, so which could be answered at a lot of levels. I would have to say the happiness of a relationship isn't based on the person who has always the best ideas, that it has to do with whether we're attuned to the other person. So that in a situation like yours, and I'm just speaking generically, I'm not,
right.
You know, because that's just one example, and I'm sure there are times that your wife thinks of things that never, you know, entered your radar screen.
Right.
But that for the happiness of the relationship, it's not who necessarily has the best ideas, but it could also be the partner who not just has the best ideas, but who, in your situation, is able to say to the wife, it must be frustrating to you that this is so painful to you and you feel so blocked.
So in other words, what you're trying to say in addition to what I've said is that influence can further be decentralized by making it more on an equal plane to collaborate more horizontally than moving forward on a more vertical position.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you follow what I'm saying then, right?
I think that I'm following what you're saying.
Yes,
and
yes.
And I don't want to get too
collaborate more horizontally would be, I think, where you're coming from in terms of sharing two mindsets that are in partnership with trying to solve a problem, as opposed to moving forward her taking more of a secondary role in accepting my better idea and subliminally have it be posited as an influence on her, which is the vertical stand that I use to exemplify that.
Well, God, you are a thinker. I'm a thinker, and you're requiring me to think beyond how I've ever even thought before. So,
but you do understand.
So let me just say this, and this is a point of view that I just want you to consider. I think that the underlying reason for marriage in a certain way is personal growth, that we all come into a marriage or a relationship with unfinished business from childhood. So let's make up that if this is a dynamic between you and your wife, and it's not an unusual dynamic, and sometimes it's the same dynamic where the woman has the better ideas, let's make up that there's a likelihood that your wife came from a background where people were not that interested in her ideas.
Right.
So that she learned to be more cautious about venturing out unless she was 1,000,000% sure her idea was applicable.
Well, then this brings in already now a cultural component to all this.
Well, let me just finish my thought. In terms of the sturdiness of the relationship, if I were doing couples therapy, and again, I'm basing this on very little data, so let's just use it as a teaching point, that sometimes it might be better for the George person to withhold his better idea and to be able to make it safe for one's partner to express perhaps her B-plus idea or B-minus idea.
Yes, yeah.
And have somebody say to her, you know, I really like that aspect of your idea, but it might not work on Thursdays. You know, I'm being bizarre right now.
Yeah.
So that I'm a wordsmith. My whole book is about words. And again, a parent-child relationship is not a marital relationship, but there are some similarities because we want our partners to grow.
Right,
and when my daughter was writing papers and would read something to me, I often had the better word, a word that was a little more nuanced. Her word was good, but I could come up with a nuanced word. And I saw where it was disempowering her.
Yeah.
So I think an interesting thing is to see what could go on that part of your wife's growth is for her to be able to express herself more and to be in the unknown and to know that she can come up with a B or a B-minus idea and you might be curious in it. And part of your growth might be at times to hold back what you absolutely know is the best solution because in the moment it might be better to empower her.
And that makes perfect sense. And I think it does coincide with what I was saying. But, Nancy, I got to break away for a moment. I want to ask you a question that sort of slip and slides into something a little bit differently, but hopefully I think equally interesting. But first, let me take a quick break.
Sure.
We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Nancy Dreyfus, discussing our topic for this evening. It's about each other. On History and You in just a moment.
In a world dominated by frameworks, platforms, and tools, it's difficult to know how to win when the only certainty is change. At Software FX, customer service and highly useful products are our main goals. Over 20 years of experience, coupled with ideas and inspiration from more than 150,000 developers all over the world, have turned into business intelligence tools that provide more choice, convenience, and value to our customers and partners. Yes, technologies do change, but Software FX has your back. That's Software FX, data visualization for every need, every platform. Call us today, toll free, at 1-800-392-4278. That's 1-800-392-4278. Be the master of your data. Software FX. Sweet Pea by Stacey Frotte is a woman's contemporary clothing line and nationally recognized brand. Sweet Pea is an innovative collection that pairs flirtiness with sensibility. Our Sweet Pea woman can be running a board meeting, watching a soccer game, or dining out with friends. Sweet Pea is recognized to be eye-catching and edgy. We empower our loyal worldwide customer base by creating clothing that fits their lifestyle. She is on the move and believes that Sweet Pea is her go-to on almost all occasions. Day into night, Sweet Pea's stylish blouses move with you and your busy day. Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, Anthropologie, and the Sweet Pea by Stacey Frotte website feature new Sweet Pea designs weekly. We have been creating beautiful clothing for 16 years, and there is no sign of us slowing down. Fashion is cyclical, it is true, but style is a constant. Please visit www.sweetpeabystaceyfrotte.com today.
Okay, and we are back with Dr. Nancy Dreyfus discussing our topic for this evening's show, It's About Each Other, and her terrific book, Talk to Me Like I'm Someone You Love, on History and You. Now, Nancy, I have a question that there's so many things that I want to get into the book and not enough time to get them all in. Is this a useful book for gay couples as well as heterosexual ones?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What kinds of couple does it help more, gay or non-gays?
I could make absolutely no distinction. Because issues, every one of the flashcards, if you think of, I realize I'm overreacting, can you give me a minute to get sane again? When you talk to me that way, I just feel small. I'm afraid to be real with you.
Right.
No argument has to do with the content, George. It only has to do with whether I feel seen by you, respected by you. That's really what it has to do with. There's not a human being on the planet who doesn't have some of those issues.
Right, yeah, and that's what I imagined, but I wanted to get confirmation from you on that. I've selected several parts of the book, Nancy, that I really wish to discuss with you. So let me begin with the unit title that or the titles that I was best able to relate to simply from my own experience. And it's the one I want to start with, the one that was called Setting Limits. Uh-huh. The first title in this unit is called I'm Feeling Very Scared of You Right Now. How common is this scenario with couples today? I'm feeling very scared of you right now. How common is this?
I would say that it's probably relevant in most arguments, and that what anger and irritability and attack is often doing is actually covering the scare. In other words, I'm thinking about this right now, possibly a better word might have been I'm feeling very threatened right now, which is a little different tone than I'm feeling very scared of you right now.
Right.
But it's a way of reminding your partner that you have feelings, that you're vulnerable, that they're, when you're really intense, when I'm really intense, it's because I'm not feeling heard. So I could be screaming at you, but I'm not feeling powerful. If I was feeling powerful, would I need to scream?
Absolutely not.
Of course not. So right. When I'm screaming, I'm not feeling powerful. So the idea that I might be scaring someone seems ridiculous, because deep down inside I'm scared. So that when I love that you actually mentioned that card. So if someone holds up the card, I'm feeling very scared of you right now, you're immediately, unless you're with a psychopath, the person who's seeing that card probably will drop down and become more caring about their impact on you.
Oh, absolutely. Just to think about redefining what he or she is going to say next. Would you say that men in a relationship are normally more frightened or intimidated by women because of a sense of guilt? In other words, a guilt perhaps based on the history of expectations for keeping women in a submissive role for so long.
Are you prepared to have your mind blown?
I always look for a challenge, my dear lady.
Okay, so I am going to blow your mind with the most interesting piece of information I have learned in the last 2 years. You remember I told you there was the guy John Gottman who could wire couples up and know what they're feeling? Well, they now have the technology to do this with newborns and infants. There is research that has been done over and over again where they take a baby 3 or 4 weeks old They hold it in the mother's arms tenderly, and then the mother abruptly puts the baby down. And for anybody listening to this, they only do it once. They're not abusing the child. They do it once. Okay, drum roll. 95% of baby girls, we're talking 3 and 4 weeks, when they're put down abruptly, feel fear. Okay, now with the real drum roll. 95-96% of baby boys, 3 or 4 weeks old, feel shame. What God
wow.
had in mind, I cannot tell wow. you. But the reason that men are so defended is somehow it is hardwired in them that when there is a rupture or discomfort, they feel there is something wrong with them, which is why men are more defended. So if you think that this is in the male-female hardwiring, George, the classic conversation, the woman says, honey, we have to talk. She's managing her anxiety over attachment and connection. There in her hardwiring.
Here's, oh, my God. Well, I mean, I was just basing it on history, because the accumulation of all of these discriminating scenarios do tend to take a toll, a mental toll on people in the very psychic of men. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I do. So here we have this kind of hardwiring, and it is very, very difficult for a man to hear a woman's feelings without feeling overly responsible. And this is the thing. If I'm feeling overly responsible for how you feel, it's all about my guilt or innocence, and I'm not a very good empathizer. In other words, it's a wonderful thing for somebody to tell me that I upset them and for me to say, wow, I can really see that that might have hurt you. Just empathize. But if
wow.
when I hear that I hurt them, it's on the line whether I'm a good person or a bad person, I can't really empathize because all I'm wanting is for you to see that I'm a good person.
Exactly. Nancy, another title that I wanted to run by you rather quickly, it starts by, in the same unit, rather than criticize me, you can tell me what you want in a more positive way. Rather than just criticize me, you can tell me what you want in a more positive way. My question, aside from the disarming quality that this flashcard has, is the key here also driven by giving your partner a sense of guilt about something?
Rather than just criticize. In other words, making them feel guilty for being critical?
Exactly. Is the key here driven, like I say, by giving your partner a sense of guilt about something just for criticizing? Because if so,
well, I never thought about it that way. But
How are couples then expected to give each other real criticism when it's warranted? Do you see what I'm saying? Because
I would say give maybe, God, let me just say this. I don't think you can be in a relationship with someone without giving them feedback about where they're off. A wonderful teacher of mine begins a workshop by saying, who here believes that you should love your partner unconditionally? And of course, everybody except their partner unconditionally. And everybody, of course, raises their hand. And what he says is if you are with a partner who accepts you completely for how you are, you're with the wrong partner. If you buy into what I'm saying, that we're here to help our partners grow.
Exactly.
Now, this is where trust comes into it. If I trust you, I can hear your feedback as wanting to help me grow. If
exactly.
I don't trust you, I hear your feedback as putting me down.
Right, exactly. And I think trust is a very pivotal word here, because it is trust that enables the other partner to distinguish whether this is feedback in the way of necessary criticism because we are not perfect on the one hand, as opposed to something else which should not be. If not, then I'm afraid that one of us within this partnership of ours begins to walk on eggshells around you.
Well, let me just tell you something. You are so provocative, thought-provoking, that your question about guilt and criticism, I don't feel I have I think it's a really interesting question. So let me say, can I say one more thing about that?
Sure.
Imagine everybody holding up, being shown a flashcard that says, rather than just criticize me, can you tell me what you want in a more positive way? Probably if you saw that in a flashcard, it could help you speak more positively. But I'm just thinking, if somebody ever said that, how would it come out? Well, rather than criticize me, can you tell me what you want in a more positive way?
Exactly.
If we put words and there was voice tone, it would totally come out as guilt tripping.
Exactly. Yeah. Is there a macho aspect to this? Is there a cultural or ethnic component to this as far as criticism is concerned?
You know, I would have to say that there are particularly certain men from certain cultures, I would say Latin cultures, where pride is rarely seen as a negative. In intimate relationship, pride becomes a negative. But if you are from a culture where pride is a positive, intimacy can be difficult because your image will get in the way of vulnerability. I would say there's another culture that's tough, which is Irish. What do Irish people do with feelings? They rage, they repress, and they drink.
Yeah.
Okay. You'll be getting letters or mail or people, you know, there are many exceptions to the rule, but I think there's some truth that there are certain cultures that are less comfortable with intimacy. You know, an Asian or Japanese culture, saving face. That's not being vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, right
what's
along
your
the
thought?
Same.
Coming from a Cuban background, what would you say about that?
Well, I think that there would be an ethnic component to this because a lot of Latin men take on this macho aspect, just like among Anglos in the Wild West. You walk into a saloon, men are either playing cards or they're playing the piano and talking to prostitutes there, and they're drinking up a storm. And then, just count from 1 to 10, and a brawl will probably break out, and you hear the piano in the background, and everybody's fighting. That's another expression of Western Anglo machoism. But among the Cubans, as with so many other Latin countries, there is a macho aspect here that is it almost has to become expressed. It's that compelling for the woman to see, and the woman culturally accepts this and embraces this. This is why I'm always amazed as to how cross-cultural marriages somehow seems to work out in a way where they bypass certain cultural aspects and really give priorities to their love together. But let me ask you another thing that I'm dying to ask you, Nancy, because I think that you would have an equally interesting answer as you've been giving all along. Another title that really blew my mind, and I want to tell you, I found your book very interesting, and I read into it very seriously, and this is why I'm getting into this so much with my time running out already. The units in Setting Limits, one of the lines read, "Right now, I don't need a lecture. I need your love. Right now, I don't need a lecture. I need your love." I thought that was riveting. Okay. And so my question was, and this is my equally riveting response back to you. To what extent might this flashcard express the love behind a well-intentioned advice without sounding condescending, like one might as a father to a daughter or a teacher to a student? To what extent would this flashcard express the love without being condescending?
Well, who would be the person expressed? Are you trying to say what you're wanting to get across is that there's love in the lecture?
No, that there is love not in a lecture, but in a piece of advice that may be interpreted as a lecture.
Well, it actually feels kind of relevant to the example before. This is the thing. If I'm feeling lectured, and I have been, I'm going to be completely honest right now. My partner has taken that particular card, and he's crossed out lecture written the word therapist and has framed it above the bed. You get that?
Yeah.
He has framed it so he just has to point and click. Just point. Yeah. So it's interesting that you're mentioning that card. And, of course, that would come from when I'm sounding like a therapist, which would he would experience as me lecturing.
Yeah.
What that person is who's flashing that card is saying is that right now I'm feeling like I'm one down and you're one up. So probably the correct response to that card would not be, can't you see that I'm only lecturing you because I love you? That wouldn't be a good response, even if it might be a true statement.
Well, then my question would be, then how do you give advice without talking down to your intimate partner?
Well, I'll give you a very quick trick. One is to say, are you open to a suggestion? The first thing would be to do it, to ask, so that there's an invitation, which would be respecting the person's boundary.
Okay,
so I'll give you some tips. One would be saying, and I can appreciate, given that you are such a thinker and have such ideas, why this would be a very poignant issue for you. It would be saying, are you open to a suggestion, which makes the person feel a little respected.
Yes.
The second thing would be to say, I have a suggestion to make to you, and I would like you to just listen to it. Yeah. I will love you if you do not follow the suggestion, but it would mean the world to me if you listen to it.
Yeah.
So if somebody, what you're wanting is for someone to listen without turning off their listening before you've even started. So if you sometimes tell people, will you listen to me, but I will still love you if you don't follow my advice, they will be more willing to listen and probably follow your advice. It's basically, isn't this the thing, that people don't want to feel controlled? So in the end, someone will say, screw you and your advice, rather than take the advice because they're feeling controlled. So the trick is to communicate without feeling control, without the other person feeling controlled.
You know, Nancy, I've had to cut one of my commercials just to get everything in because I have another very poignant part here with my time running out. There is one in Unit 3, feeling vulnerable. And it reads, I know I sounded extremely angry, but I was feeling more threatened than you could possibly have known. I know I sounded extremely angry, but I was feeling more threatened than you could possibly have known. My questions, do couples normally supplant one's emotion for another's reaction? Why does anger become a response to a threat?
Because we don't like feeling weak. It kind of gets back even to what you were talking about macho and cultural.
Okay.
In other words, anger. I'm going to say something which might be a new thought for some of our listeners. I would say almost never is anger primary. It is almost always covering a feeling of feeling weak, vulnerable, invisible. So that if we can begin saying, I'm feeling threatened, we can understand that what's really going on beneath the angry person.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. And I would agree. I would agree. Because, I mean, even myself, many times with my wife, I've seen myself in that situation as well many, many times. Nancy, there's just too much here. We either have to make this a two-hour show or I have to have you on the show back again with the same terrific book. But I'm afraid that on that note, that's all the time we have. Nancy, I can't thank you enough for sharing your time with us, especially when knowing how very busy you are, your insight and interest in giving us your thoughts on finding happiness in our relationships is definitely a moment's value in time. Thank you, Nancy, so very much.
Well, thank you for taking my book so seriously. You are an interviewer who truly looked through it, and I appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. And now we've come to that part, the final part of our show, where I wish to leave you with a final thought to consider and to further reflect regarding the signs of our times. Some final thoughts, and Nancy, please listen to this one. Whenever you deal with people, the dynamics are as interesting and fun as they are challenging and hurtful. My father once told me, and by the way, this advice came from a man who was married to my mother for 63 years. But my father once told me that one of the secrets to having a long and happy marriage was to choose someone who naturally coincides with the way you are on the part of both the woman and the man. This is not an easy thing to do in your life, but it worked well for him. Is there something viable in that kind of advice? Are the individual natures of how we are so important as to determine whether couples will gel and thrive in the face of so much adversity that life has in store? Well, all that my wisdom can tell you, for whatever that's worth, is that love is the most powerful force I've ever seen in my life and in the lives of many other people I've come to know and long remember. Love withers the evil eye, and like rushing water, it pervades and overwhelms without resistance everything in its path. If you have faith in the love you feel for someone else, and that same kind of love comes back to you, nothing will ever matter except the two of you together. If you want to love, serve others. If you want to be loved, be heartfelt to others. Your existence has no meaning alone. It's only what you do in your solitude that defines and colors what you feel for and how you do the things you do in your life. Join me again next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. for another hour of insight by visiting my website at www.bbsradio.com/historyinyou. As your host for this evening's show, this is George Rodriguez Walling wishing for all of you a very pleasant evening. Good night.